Hey guys, welcome to Fit Chicks Chat. On today's podcast, I'm interviewing the lovely Marie Barker. Marie is an online women's wellness coach with a passion for ditching the yo-yo diet mentality and getting to the root cause of why we're really hungry. She's worked with hundreds of women across Canada and the US and also mentors a team of coaches known as the Boomerang Babes to do the same. She is a retired high school English teacher, at-home workout junkie, and self-proclaimed taco aficionado. She can be found sharing her everyday adventures on Instagram at Marie Barker Wellness, as well as on her blog, MarieBarkerWellness.com. So welcome, Marie.
Welcome to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast, where we talk all things fitness, nutrition, and wellness for women to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life inside and out. And now, your hosts, Laura Jackson and Amanda Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fit Chicks Chat. I'm Amanda Quinn, and in today's episode, I do not have Laura Jackson with me because instead, I have the lovely Marie Barker with me. Hi, Marie.
Hey.
How you doing?
So well. Super excited for this.
Awesome. So for everyone listening, I am talking to Marie today, and we're basically going to be breaking down a lot of the stuff and the extra sort of like, I don't know, I don't even want to call it baggage, just like the extra sort of layers that kind of come with emotional eating and sort of what it is, how to identify it, what to do if you find that you do have like subtleties or you have some signs of emotional dependency on food and how we can kind of break through that. So I'm really, really looking forward to this chat because I think that this is one of those things that a lot of people deal with on a regular basis. Some people have no idea they're dealing with it, and then some know it, they don't know what to do with it. So we're really going to try to break it down for everyone and help them understand what it is and how we can kind of maybe move past it or maybe just try to develop new healthy habits. So before we get started, Marie, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about your personal journey to wellness and sort of, you know, your why behind what it is that you currently do? Because I think that understanding where you're coming from is so key for people to really understand how this particular conversation really plays an important role for you as well.
For sure. And you know what, I think it comes back to that whole, like, your healing is your message. So usually it's people who've been through the ropes that get to share that message in the end.
Yeah.
So for myself, growing up, I was always the allergy kid. Like, my friends would joke that I needed bubble wrap. I was always injured. I was allergic to everything. I tried a variety of eliminations from a really young age. You know, my parents thought maybe it was mushrooms or artificial colorings, so I couldn't have freezies or cheesies or
all those. Oh, sad.
Yeah, no, delicious food, kid foods. I switched to like rice milk and stuff. So
yeah,
just had a lot of, like allergies and hay fever and that kind of stuff as a young kid. And then as I moved into my teenage years, I don't know exactly, but I think being the oldest of six kids, I developed a little bit of a diehard overachiever personality. Mm-hmm. So I put myself through a lot of stress, you know, and a lot of people don't realize the correlation between stress and health. And I certainly didn't at that point. So I ended up getting super sick in high school and my immune system basically crashed on me. I ended up in ICU with tracheitis, which is like one in a million.
Oh my God.
Yeah, just really weird sicknesses where I couldn't seem to heal from. You know, like lots of allergic reactions that led to anaphylaxis and that kind of stuff. So I tried a whole bunch of modalities. I've been going to an acupuncturist and a naturopathic doctor for as long as I can remember. I tried the Candida diet. I did acupuncture. I tried medicinal teas. And then finally, when I was 15, I was actually diagnosed with celiac disease and IBS. And okay. That kind of started the journey, I guess, towards better wellness and towards my understanding, I guess, between the immune system and the gut. I still wasn't quite sure. So part of that, I really felt out of control of my own body. And I mean, that's such a disempowering place to be. So, mm-hmm. You know, and at the same time too, I'm a teenager. So I'm going through these body image issues at the exact same time and pairing that with the frustration of not being able to eat certain foods, like without getting sick. So I would just stop eating. I just wouldn't eat for hours on end. And I remember getting home after school and I'd go to practice and I'd go work one of my jobs all day. I'd go pretty much all day without eating. I'd get home late at night and I would just binge. And it ended up being this really vicious cycle. And I ended up with hypoglycemia. And I mean, that's where hangry comes from. So, you know, just added that to the whole mix. But it took me quite a few years to get my celiac disease under control. And I feel like just going back to that whole, my healing is my message. Since I've been able to figure out these strategies and tips and tricks, and since I've been through it, I know other people have as well. Especially in these last couple of years when, you know, a lot more people are becoming more aware of gluten intolerance and celiac disease and IBS and leaky gut and all those kind of things. So, yeah, I was super, super sick. And then honestly, it took me about, I would say it was like my second year of, or sorry, my fifth year of university. I was in the College of Education, and a girlfriend of mine at the time, I saw her post on Facebook, and I was just feeling so frustrated. And at this point had developed some pretty nasty self-loathing thoughts too about my body and these self-limiting beliefs. And I saw her post on Facebook and she looked so freaking happy. And I was like, man, whatever she's doing, it's working, you know? And I was also point, like feeling like, okay, I got to restrict carbs. I got to work out. I got to do cardio for hours on end. I was working out. I was eating healthy, or so I thought, you know, restricting and that kind of thing. And I just reached out to her and I was just like, can you please share with me what you're doing? Because whatever it is, it's working. You look so vibrant and I crave that. I'm so desperate for that. Yeah. And she shared with me, she said, you know, I've been doing these Beachbody at home workouts for the last year. I drink this superfood supplement called Shakeology, and I read personal development, and I do it with a group of girls in this Facebook group, and we have this pretty sweet community. If you wanted to do a program with us, you're more than welcome. And I dove in, like I dove all in. That was 3 years ago. And I mean, since that time, I have been able to turn my entire life around. I've healed my gut. I've healed my mind, you know, depression, anxiety. I was always riddled with it, healed all of it. And I've been able to help hundreds of women do the same since then. So, I mean, if I can do it, anybody can. And that's kind of why I do what I do.
That's amazing. And that's such a, it's, I mean, it's a really interesting story. And it's also a very common story, right? Because not common of like the levels that you were going through, but common in the sense of a lot of women are in that same boat of like looking around and seeing like all these people, and they crave that sort of vibrancy and they crave that energy. And they're just like, okay, well, I feel like I'm doing everything right, but I don't know what is missing. And oftentimes it's like, it's just you maybe are overtraining, or you're not eating enough, or you're restricting too much, or you're not eating the right things. And so having someone coach you and help you through that, and having someone mentor you through that is ideal. And I'm so happy that you were able to find that as well, because I think that having that group and having that coach and having that person to look to help you through the process is the key to success, because we can't do everything on our own, even though we want to sometimes.
Oh, exactly. Like, I'm such an A-type, so I know that there are so many people that can relate to that, but it's crazy. I mean, when I found the correlation between like my mental health and my physical health, then everything changed. You know, I was of the mindset that self-help books were for people who didn't have their shit together. And I was like, nah, I have my ish together, even though I'm so strong, I don't need self-help books, you know? And I mean, oh, I remember reading, I think one of the first ones I ever read was The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy. And that just changed the game for me. It really, it blew my mindset of all or nothing out of the water, because it made me realize that the habits that we do every single day either work for or against us. And it wasn't this like all at once, you know, eat a salad one time and go to the gym for 2 hours and on an incline of 20 or whatever on the elliptical. You know, it wasn't like this one time behavior that was going to lead to my success. It was the daily choices, you know, that I was making. Like, am I getting enough sleep? Am I drinking enough water? Am I choosing to eat foods that make me feel good and energized instead of starving myself, or eating foods that deplete me, you know? So just those choices.
Or eating foods that are like the instant gratification, but they don't actually serve you in the end, you know? Like, and I think, and that happens so often times. We kind of feed ourselves because we're starving, or this or that, because we've been restricting for so long. And then you're just like feeding yourself to get full, but you're not feeding yourself to get fuel. Like it's such a different way of thinking. So,
and I think too, like a lot of, I work with women, like that's, to be honest, that's only who my clientele is, only because I am a woman and that's who I can speak from experience with. But
I hear you.
One of the biggest things that I try to teach about is, you know, when you see all these different diet fads coming and going and people jumping I call it shiny penny syndrome. They jump to all these different modalities and fads and products and stuff with the hopes that it's going to be the thing that helps them finally lose weight, finally feel worthy, finally find fulfillment, you know? And I think a lot of us discount the fact that we are emotional creatures. Like, humans are totally emotional, and we have food. Relate to food with celebrations, with funerals, with weddings, with family events, at parties, you know, it's not just fuel. And I think when people try to treat it as such, they discount the fact that they are an emotional person. They are going to go through stressful times or times of loneliness or boredom when they are going to try to maybe reach for that as a crutch. So really important to remember that.
No, that's a really, really solid point. So speaking about, because I know we were going to break down sort of the stuff about emotional eating. So what would be sort of some of the common emotional, and I don't like to use the word common, but like, I guess, you know, some of the ones that you see more often, like in your field and working with people you've worked with, as well as just in your own personal journey, like what would you say would be some of the emotional eating behaviors that you see coming up a little bit more often than not, I guess?
There's quite a few. I would say that, I would say restriction. I would say we're kind of still stuck in that like low fat, low carb mentality. And, you know, like just thinking foods are bad. The cheat day mindset and the guilt, like food guilt, is really huge with women that I, have worked with.
Gosh, yeah.
that in itself, it's not so much what you're eating that is, I mean, it is, but it's not, you know, it's not so much what you're eating that is totally affecting you, but it's your body's physiological response to how you're feeling. So if you're eating, let's say, for example, you made homemade burgers and sweet potato fries, and you're eating this homemade burger and sweet potato fries, but you're feeling like garbage that you're eating this, and you're already thinking, oh my God, I have to do cardio tomorrow to work this off. This is crazy, you know, and you're having this like really shitty physiological response to the food you're eating. Your body recognizes that as stress, and it doesn't know the difference between a funeral or a wedding, right? It's stress is stress. Right. So when you're doing that, you're producing this negative response in your body, and you're going to hold on to extra fat. You're going to hold on to this energy because your body feels like it's under attack. So same thing, if you're eating, I don't know, people eat salad and they're like, oh, I shouldn't have dressing because, you know, extra calories or whatever. It's so important to just eat food that makes you feel good, you know? So I actually have a few questions too for your listeners if they want, that I will ask myself, I'll ask my clients, and this kind of helps people identify, I mean, if they are struggling with an emotional dependency or association with food. So I'd be happy to share those if you want.
Yeah, no, I would love to hear those for sure. Cause I think that, you know, and that was going to be one of my questions, was going to be kind of like the signs to identify emotional dependency or associations. But I think this is kind of like a great lead way into that, because this is kind of like the questions that you would ask yourself to kind of see where you are personally at.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. So like the first question I would ask is, are you eating when you're not hungry? You know, like eating just for the sake of it. Are you looking for inspiration from the fridge? Number two, do you find yourself insatiable? I find, like if you find yourself eating more than you know you need in one sitting and still feeling unsatisfied. And there's a difference between eating turkey dinner at Christmas with your family and eating two plates of food and just like a casual Tuesday night downing three plates of pasta, you know, like
right.
the insatiability. But do you find yourself not eating for hours on end on purpose? That's a really big one. If you're avoiding also, you know, I think people often attribute emotional eating. They think it's just overeating or just binging, but I would attribute not eating on purpose with that as well.
Right.
If you find yourself obsessing over your body image, you know, our relationship with food and our relationship with body is pretty hand in hand. So that's something to really be aware of. Are you speaking negatively to and about yourself? You know, when you pass by the mirror, are you thinking things that you would say to a friend or your daughter? Because, man, when I poll the women that I work with, oftentimes they'll be like, God, I would never say the stuff that I say to myself to a friend or my daughter. I would never say those
things. Of course. We're so awful to ourselves sometimes. Like we're so hard on ourselves at times, for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, those are some of the basic questions I would ask, you know, more so just, okay, how do I view food? How's my relationship with food, and how's my relationship with my body? And if you find yourself avoiding or overeating, and if you find yourself thinking and speaking negatively to and about yourself, then you might want to dive a little deeper into that self-work there.
For sure. And what would you say to someone too, that's like kind of jumping on every fad diet that's out there? Would you also say that that's probably a sign of, a sign of this sort of emotional dependency or emotional eating behaviors?
I would attribute that more so to, I call it the if when. So I'll be happy.
Yeah, I know this.
I'll be happy when it's the weekend. I'll be satisfied when I lose 20 pounds. It's the whole if when mentality. And man, if I could just impart any takeaway for your listeners today, it would just be, there is no there, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So if you have the same crappy mindset about yourself, doesn't matter if you lose 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds. I've seen it done before. I've seen women who've lost 60 pounds and they still feel so terrible about themselves because they haven't changed their mindset and they haven't actually changed their habits. So just with the whole quick fix, magic bullet, you know, push button society that we live in, we love instant gratification. We want an instant text. We want Wi-Fi connection that's as fast as possible. We want like a meal to be microwaved in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Love quick, you know, but the secret with all of this, the secret to wellness is that there is no there, and it's a practice that you have to commit to daily. So even I get comments sometimes from people, they're like, well, you're so lucky, you're so fit and happy and beautiful and optimistic, you know, and it doesn't come easy to me. This is a daily practice that I, among many people, choose to practice because, I mean, the alternative sucks.
Yeah.
It's hard, essentially. So I choose this, and it's not always easy, definitely, but it's always, always worth it. So
for sure. Now, just going back for a second, when you were talking about like common emotional eating behaviors, you did say that one of the things that struck me was when you're talking about restrictive eating.
Yes.
You're saying that you would also see that as an emotional, and I agree with you. Now, what do you say though to someone who, because I know one of the biggest fads right now is intermittent fasting, and I'm not saying it's a fad. It is a fad because it's getting really popular and it's getting really mainstream and it's on Dr. Oz and people are talking about it, but you know, it's been around for a long time. What do you say to someone who's like, oh, I think I'm going to try that? Because in my mind, intermittent fasting, I understand the physical benefits of it. And I understand, you know, the reason behind it, but there's a lot of people that do it not for digestion or not for that particular purpose. They do it more just for, it's just like another fancy kind of way of saying I'm restricting myself to only eating for 6 hours at a day.
See, and I think that's where people have to get honest with themselves. You know, it's, am I doing this to lose weight so that I feel worthy? Or am I doing this for health benefits like disease prevention and like mitochondria buildup?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with keto right now. Keto, when done properly, is so fantastic. And in small doses, I should say, because especially for women, like our hormones are so, so important, and they attribute to everything. They attribute to everything. So when a woman, let's, for example, intermittent fast, so your insulin levels dropped, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you're eating if your body's in ketosis all the time, your hormones are going to be out of whack. You need carb-free fuel days if you're eating a ketogenic diet, you know, like stuff like that. Most people don't recognize. And with regards to the intermittent fasting, I would say that just getting honest with yourself and really reflecting on, okay, am I doing this because I think it'll help me lose weight? You know, or am I doing this because I think this is the best way for my body to eat long term? Like, it took me a really long time to figure out for myself what a daily eating schedule could and should look like. I had heard you should always eat breakfast, you should eat a big breakfast, you shouldn't eat breakfast, you should eat 6 times a day, you should eat every 2 hours, you know, like all this stuff.
So much contradictory info out there. It's crazy.
You can find something proving and disproving, I guess, anything. You can find the information out there for whatever you want, but at the end of the day, you really have to get to know yourself and become a student of yourself. Because, for example, myself, broccoli and cauliflower, like, I don't do that well with cruciferous vegetables. You know, I've got leaky gut and I've got some IBS stuff with having an autoimmune disease. So I kind of steer clear from those. And those are also cancer fighting vegetables. So a lot of people will say, oh, you have to eat broccoli and cauliflower. You know? But for me, it doesn't work. Or breakfast. If I eat a huge breakfast right off the bat, my stomach will blow up because my digestive system isn't ready for it. So I find that in the morning, if I just have my organic coffee with some collagen and MCT oil and a little bit of coconut milk, that ties me over till like noon. And then I'll do my workout and then I'll eat. So it's really individual. And I think that's the key piece that people miss, is that there is no black and white. There is no one size fits all. So you really have to be a student of yourself and get honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm. And would you say, like, for someone who is really curious about trying to figure out the best sort of emotional or / eating plan for themselves, would you say it's best to just kind of do trial and error, or to look to someone who can really help you through those processes. Because I think that sometimes, like what we were talking about just a moment ago, and you said, like, you can find something that will tell you one thing, and then you can find the complete opposite on the next page on Google, right? Like, I mean, if you're just searching for information, you're going to find stuff that contradicts itself consistently. So if you hire someone, though, you can really work through things and they can keep track of it for you. They can really record it. Do you find that is beneficial for people to really have basically like an eating coach that would help them just like a trainer would through this process?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say yes. I think that everybody needs a coach. You know, like I myself have coaches and mentors in the form of,
Certainly. Yeah.
Like, it's so important to be coachable throughout your whole life. I just think, learning and growing is so important. And the day that you get to, hey, I think I know everything, man, that's the day you start dying. Cause there's always more to learn. There's always more to know. Mm-hmm. But for somebody who is just starting out and they have no idea, where to start, or they are feeling totally overwhelmed by the idea of it, or they find themselves continually yo-yo dieting. You know, I have so been there. Mm-hmm. I think finding a coach and finding a tribe of women who are also on that journey is really empowering, because you realize that you're not alone in it. I think it's really easy to trick ourselves. You know, our egos trick ourselves often into, this is just my problem. I'm a victim. This is so hard on me, just me. Life's happening to me, not for me, you know? Mm-hmm. And the funniest thing about all of this is that we're so much more likely to show up for other people. So, I mean, if you have a coach who's keeping you accountable, that accountability piece and the support piece is huge. You can do the work yourself, absolutely, and need to, like, learn those sustainability practices. But having somebody who says, hey, man, like, this is what we're going to be working on this week. Do you have any questions for me? Okay, I expect you to check in with me on Saturday. You're consciously thinking, okay, I have to check in on Saturday. So I'm trying to put in place these habits and these strategies that my coach is helping me with, you know. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the work that I do, I host a small, intimate online support group for 3 weeks every month. And I mean, the women in there consistently express, it's so cool to see other women going through the same struggles and the same things as me, you know, busy jobs, like busy kids, mom life, farm life, business woman life, whatever, you know, having days when it's like, man, I just want to do nothing and eat a whole cake to myself and watch Netflix. Like, people going through the same things that you're going through. So that's a really key.
I think you just described my like dream day. No, I'm just kidding.
I just speak it because I know it.
Now, before we get into sort of your top tips on how to work through some of these barriers, I just have a question in terms of like demographic. Is there any research that shows that demographics like gender or anything play a role in this, or is it just kind of person to person? Like, is it more of a generalized thing, or is it really just like, do women seem to have more emotional dependencies? I don't know. I'm just curious.
You know what? I don't know about the published research, but I've been fortunate enough to work with hundreds of women at this point. Mm-hmm. I would say that while I can't discount that men go through this, women are by nature more emotional creatures. You know, we're programmed to be more emotional, whereas men's tendencies are more biological, I guess. Well, we're both biological, but you know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah.
Women are more emotionally inclined. So I don't think that it pertains to just women, but I would say in my experience that especially with the diet industry and all the different, like, look this way, act this way so that you can be loved by society that's going on. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit more challenging for women, maybe a little bit more pressure on women. So that's who I found personally to struggle the most with this kind of stuff, you know? And I mean, it doesn't just pertain to one age group either. I have worked with women from all walks of life and all ages who, mm-hmm. food to numb and cope, you know. It's just the whole worthiness conversation. So, and I mean comparison too, there's a lot of that going on, especially with the ease with which we can see other people's highlight reels on social media.
Really, oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, like that could be a whole other conversation too, but really,
yeah.
comparisonitis, I call it, the rabbit hole there.
Yeah. So then, I mean, we've talked about a bunch of different sort of, you know, situations like emotional eating, people that eat it for celebration. Cause like, that's one of the things actually. And before we get into your sort of top tips to work through the barriers, you know, one of the things that I personally even worked through in terms of a barrier was the whole idea around eating to celebrate, because we're taught at such a young age that like, you know, you have cake at a birthday and you have like, when it's like a party, you have like some like pizza or junk food or whatever. Like it's always kind of like any kind of celebration. We always seem to attribute it to food. Or if you do really well on a test in school, your parents might buy you a treat or something. So there's always that weird food association from when you were younger. Right. And I realized how much I associated food to situations when I went to the Biggest Loser Ranch in Utah. And I went there with my business partner. We went there a few years ago to train and just to learn and grow as trainers and professionals, just to see what, you know, some of the best in the industry were doing in terms of training and the mindset and everything else. And I remember on our graduation day, so we only stayed for a week. There were some people there that were there for like literally like months. And we were like, we were done after 5 days. I was like, I can barely even walk. And but I remember on graduation day, I still remember this so clearly. They gave us a Cobb salad for dinner.
Okay.
And then it was like strawberries for dessert. And I was like pissed. Like I was like, what? Like this is the celebration dinner. Like I was expecting it to be like something really delicious and amazing. And it was, actually a really good salad. But I remember thinking like, I was like, where's the cake? Why are we eating strawberries for dessert? This isn't cool. And then I was like, wait. And I had that aha moment of like, why does it matter what I'm eating? It's just a celebration. It's not about the food. But I associated the food so clearly with the celebration and the idea of celebrating that I didn't even know that I had that association until that moment. Like, and it was like, I wonder if they did it on purpose in a way to kind of give you that aha moment or not. But I just remember having it and being like kind of blown away by like, whoa, like I really have to start checking myself when I'm in these moments to be like, it's not about the food. It's about the environment and it's about the activity that's happening. It's about the celebration that's happening. It's not about what it is that I'm putting into my body, right?
Exactly.
And so being that was kind of one of my little barriers that I worked through was understanding that. But what would you say would be sort of some of your top tips for anyone that's listening right now that has that, you know, maybe answers those questions or answers some of those questions that you put out there and is like, oh, wait, that is me. How do they work through some of these barriers?
For sure. I love that you shared that too. I personally, same exact experience. And also I want to add this one too. Growing up, it was always finish the food on your plate.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You're not leaving the table till you're done.
Yeah,
I'd sit there for hours.
Yeah, so would I. And I think of that, like parents don't know. You know what you know, right? And you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Parents do that. They're just trying to teach their children to appreciate the meal that's in front of them. But it actually kind of ends up doing this like reverse, like all like psychological thing.
Where you gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, you're going to have to do the self-work. This is the part where people are like, oh, it's so annoying. I have to do the work, you know, but you have to be willing to get honest with yourself. And you have to be willing to really dive into, why you do the things you do. And I mean, one of the best questions I can pose for people is to ask yourself, what am I really hungry for? Because more times than not, when you're relying on emotional eating behaviors and that kind of thing, you're usually hungry for love or affection, or you're stressed out, or you're angry, or you're bored, you know, like all the different emotions that have to do with life and not just food. But one of my top tips that I would definitely suggest for people is to get a journal. And you can go pretty crazy with this, and you can keep a food journal for a week just to see what kind of foods you're eating and how they're making you feel and that kind of thing. I suggest throwing calorie counting out the window. I'm gonna be honest with you, it is not not often I tell people like how to eat, except for giving guidelines. But I mean, man, throw calorie counting out the window. That does nothing for you, you know.
It doesn't serve you at all. It just stresses you out more. And weighing out your food and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if you weigh food. It's way too much. It's too much involved, and it's just, I don't know, it stresses me out. It makes me feel anxious, and it makes me feel like almost neurotic about the idea of it.
Yeah. Well, you get obsessed about it, right? Like exactly. I remember there was a time in my life when I was using the MyFitnessPal app or whatever to track my food. I was like, okay, I'm gonna start tracking my food. This will be good. I'll make sure that I'm on my calorie target or whatever, which I had no clue how many calories a day I was supposed to eat. I think I had myself at like 1200 or something, which for a 6 foot athletic woman of my size, you know, and my activity that I do, I should be eating closer to like 1500 to 1800, you know? So
yeah,
anyways, I was depriving myself and not really even realizing it, but I found I got so obsessed with calorie counting. And then as the years went on, I realized, oh my God, like the macro ingredients really don't even matter. It's the micro ingredients that are so important, you know? So reading the nutrition label, like you only get a certain amount of information. You read, oh, it has 170 calories, and people go, oh, that's over my caloric intake, but 170 calories of what? You know, like a McDonald's muffin. Is 170 calories of shit, whereas 170 calories of nuts and vegetables looks like a feast. So it's, you know, it totally, totally depends. But
for sure, it's like looking at the quality of what you're putting into your body as well, rather than focusing on the quantity.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest people get a journal. And just every time you find yourself heading towards your snack cupboard or whatever, like I know everybody has a snack cupboard.
Yeah. Or a drawer in my case.
I feel like this one's worked for me personally, and it's worked for lots of my clients. So every time you find yourself heading towards that snack cupboard, like midday, and you're like, I'm kind of peckish, just sit down for like 2 minutes. Just give yourself, okay, 2 minutes before I binge, I'm just going to journal out how I'm feeling, you know, and like, it's important not to edit anything. Just write down exactly what you're feeling in that moment. And it can be so, so powerful, because we often realize that our emotions are about something altogether different. Like the kids are driving me nuts and I just need to get outside for 20, you know? So maybe you call a friend or call your mom to come over for 20 minutes. You can take a walk around the block with a podcast. Like it's just those kind of things to recognize, why am I reaching for this? What am I actually hungry for, you know? And it's about developing enough self-compassion for yourself to recognize when you're trying to numb some other feeling with food instead of actually facing that feeling. I think that's a really key point, because we try to avoid feeling anything other than happiness, you know, but it's so important to feel the entire spectrum of emotions. That's what it is to be human. So.
And what would you say to someone, like, for example, for me, I know I've done this activity for myself where I've kind of, you know, taking a step back and been like, oh, why am I craving this? I have this very particular craving that I eat, which is popcorn mixed with barbecue chips. And it sounds super weird, but it's actually really delicious. Yeah. And I only eat that though when I'm feeling really lonely, but I recognized it as like, it took me a long time to kind of figure out what that association was. And I recognized that it comes from, again, from my childhood. When I was younger, my mom used to give that to my sister and I as a treat whenever we would go to the drive-in. And so it was like this weird association that I have, but it was like this place where I was always so happy, you know? And so it's kind of like when I feel really lonely or I miss my mom, especially when I first moved out and I was younger and I like was living on my own and stuff, I found that I would eat that when I felt really lonely. What do you say for someone though that recognizes the association, and when they do it, they're still recognizing like, oh, I'm probably feeling lonely, but I'm still going to do it. Like, do you suggest not doing it? Or do you suggest, even if you recognize it and you still want to do it, just give yourself some slack kind of thing? Or do you suggest doing something different to get away from that loneliness, if that was sort of the emotion that came up?
Well, I mean, that actually like leads into the second thing I was going to talk about.
I'm sorry.
No, that's exactly such a perfect segue. Cause I was just going to say, like, we need to stop restricting so damn much, you know, like those feelings only really come about when we find ourselves restricting. And then it's like, oh, I am feeling like I need to reach for whatever, popcorn and barbecue chips, or in my case, it's all dressed chips or chips and salsa, or, you know, the salty, crunchy deliciousness or like buttered noodles or whatever. I don't know why that is a thing, but along with like what you just said there, like you associate love with popcorn and barbecue chips, right? Or the drive-thru, because when you were a kid and your mom would take you there, like that was a way for her to show you love. So that is like a subconscious pattern that you would have. And we all have them in different, for different things, but that would be a subconscious pattern that you have that you might recognize it, but it's still a pattern that you have. So, and when I recognize that I am doing something and I recognize why I'm doing it, for example, like eating a whole bag of all dressed chips, this happened to me like a week ago, actually. I swore off chips for a couple months because I was like, man, that's probably not the best. But I still go through these times of kind of all or nothing. Like I'm usually quite conscientious and I'm usually quite good. But again, I'm an emotional person who makes mistakes, just like you, just like everybody listening to this, you know? Mm-hmm. So I found myself, it was the week before my cycle, before Shark Week, I call it. And I dove head first into a bag of all dressed chips and I crushed it, the entire bag myself. And I finished the bag and I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? Like blacked out, just, you know, just ate the whole bag.
Yeah. You're just like in robot mode, like robot feed mode.
And then I was like, man, you know what? I need to check myself because there's obviously something going on here that I'm trying to fill a void, you know. And it ended up, I did some journaling and I was like, man, I'm overworking myself.
You know,
I'm tired. I need to take a rest day. I just dove into a bag of chips because of all these other things that I'm not doing. And I'm preaching self-care. I need to now take a couple of days to really focus on practicing it. So
cool.
Yeah. But I would just say, like, back to the whole, like, not restricting so much, because people, especially women, I find, and I've been so guilty of this, which is why I can speak to it. I'm not going to tell anybody how, like, what style of diet to eat, because there's, everybody's needs are so individual, right? Like we talked about before, mm-hmm. but it's not a sustainable practice to restrict yourself. You know, it's the whole pendulum, like it will swing back the other way. And that's when you find yourself headfirst in a bag of chips, like I did, you know, when you restrict yourself, it often leads to binging. And I actually have an activity that I can share with you too, that I give to my clients to do in our 3-week group that we do. And it's pretty profound if done. So what I get them to do is I get them to take out a piece of paper and make 2 columns on the piece of paper. And on the left column, I write foods that nourish me. And you just write down a list underneath that in that column of all the foods that just make you feel so energized, make you feel vibrant, you know, like water, salmon, cucumbers, berries, eggs, and coffee, warm soups, whatever, like foods that you just feel so good when you eat. And you feel nourished with, mm-hmm. you know, and then in the other column, I get them to write down foods that deplete me. And this list could look something like donut breads, I don't know, alcohol, fatty salad dressings, deep fried foods, takeout Chinese lunch, processed meats, you know, like those kinds of things that, you know, that after the first bite, it's like a bowl of Kraft dinner, you know, that it's going to taste good in the first bite. And then the whole bowl after that, you're like, I'm actually eating plastic. What am I doing? Like, why is this happening? But anyways, I get them to pin that list to the fridge, you know, and put it up on the fridge so you can be reminded of those foods that make you feel amazing every single time you reach for a snack or a meal. And it can be so powerful just to have that visual reminder, especially when our cravings are in our heads, you know. And most people experience cravings because they're still eating foods that are, I mean, sugary chemical shitstorms, for lack of better terminology.
Yeah, they don't have the proper nutrients, right? So their body is just craving other things to fulfill the needs.
Exactly. Well, I mean, sugar is just as, if not more, addictive than cocaine, right? So we hear this, we're like, oh yeah, that sounds, yeah, I guess so. And then we go and eat all these foods that are so laden with sugar that we wouldn't even think are so laden with sugar. Like, this mm-hmm. is kind of a crazy stat. I remember learning this last summer and just being like mind blown. The average daily intake that a woman should have for sugar in a day is 24 grams.
Okay.
It's like, the average in 1 tablespoon of barbecue sauce, there's 18 grams of sugar.
Uh-oh.
So like, and that's not even like talking about what you're putting the barbecue sauce on or the dessert, you know, like it's,
yeah.
And not to like get into like the whole caloric thing, but just to show as an example, like the sugar intake, we have all the products that we eat, all the food products we eat are so, they're just loaded with sugar and salt and fat. So it's really, really important just to try to eat, as whole, yeah, like from the earth as much as possible, and like really did package foods, because I mean, man, that's when you have sugar in your system, you're going to continue to crave it, you know. And when you're not getting, when your body's not getting those vitamins and nutrients that it wants, it's going to crave things. So for example, if you have like a sugar craving, your body might actually just be craving certain vitamins and minerals that you're not getting, like magnesium or chromium or something, you know. And instead of diving into a chocolate bar, you could eat like nuts or sweet potatoes or fruit or something to diminish that craving. So it's really just recognizing what your body's doing, how you're treating it, and the whole restricting thing just leads to binging. Been there, done that. It doesn't work. I am all about balanced eating well. And if I want to go out and eat a delicious meal at a restaurant, like I'm going to go eat a delicious meal at a restaurant, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to be like, oh, I have to get the dressing on the side, and I have, you know, if that's what you want to do, that's your choice. But I feel like the restricting thing, I've been there. It didn't bring me any joy. It ended up causing me more pain than anything. And I'm in a better place now mentally and physically than I've ever been. And this is the time in my life when I let myself choose foods that I want to be eating in that moment.
Right. And what do you say, and just before we wrap up, I'm just curious, what do you say to your clients that kind of label foods as good foods, bad foods? Because I know that that can create so much of an emotional sort of reaction for people. And sometimes, I mean, we use those words so freely, I find, in this industry nowadays. And I disagree with it. I think that we should just be eating, like, I just try to say, like, real food, like, meaning like unpackaged, unprocessed foods. And that's kind of what I tell my clients, as opposed to like eat clean or eat good foods, just because I think that as soon as you start putting those kinds of, like, it's like the good and the bad to anything, you start creating that, like, it's a new association almost of like, oh no, that's bad. I don't eat that. I can't eat that, you know? And it's never a positive thing. So what do you say to any clients that maybe come to you and kind of start using that verbiage? Do you agree with that or not?
I love that you brought that up so much. we just became best friends. We have the same mindset, so that's awesome. I think switching your mindset around it, you know, like, I'll give you a really good example, actually, and it's disturbing to say it out loud, and I actually haven't told very many people this, but...
Now so, you're telling hundreds of thousands of people.
Perfect.
Yeah. Go for it.
That's when secrets should come out, right?
Yeah.
So I developed celiac disease when I was 15, and the habits and that I used to have in place, I used to be a people pleaser. And now I try to serve and please people, but I know that I need to fill my cup first in order to be the best version. So I developed celiac disease, and through the first few years of me discovering, okay, like, this is how to eat gluten-free, this is what I can have, this is what I can't have. If I went over to a friend's house or, you know, like a boyfriend or whatever's house, and their mom, for example, had made something that they were so excited for that they really wanted to serve me, and yeah, I asked them what's in it, and I knew that there was like some gluten containing ingredient in it, I would still eat the food because I was so afraid of offending and making them feel bad, and I was less worried about my own well-being. So wow, I would eat food and I would get sick, you know. And it really took me a long time to figure out, okay, me being afraid of offending them because I can't eat a food that they didn't realize the ingredient, like Worcestershire or something, has barley in it, right, which is a gluten, yeah, ingredient. Me not standing up for myself and respecting myself enough was teaching other people to do the same. And so it really took me a lot of self-work to realize, okay, I am choosing the foods that I want to eat. I'm choosing this, not I can't. And it's a little bit difficult when it's like an actual disease that is restricting you from certain foods, kind, correct, of thing.
When people, it's a different level for sure.
Yeah, a different level. But I mean, when people are saying like, you have to just eat clean, you have to eat clean all the time, like, I'm just going to say it again. We are emotional freaking creatures. You know, we laugh and we cry and we grieve and we celebrate with food. It's just, that's how it is. It's across all cultures. We use food as a way to come together with other people in community, right? And that's, mm-hmm, that's the whole be all end all. But for anybody that's got this bad food, good food mentality and restriction, I think it's really important to figure out why you have that mentality. Maybe it might go back to childhood. You know, I work with a lot of women who they witnessed their mom having a really bad relationship with her body and food. And it's like, kids will always do as you do and say as you say, you know.
Oh,
and
totally.
I think it's really important, especially if you have little ones, to really be so conscientious about how you speak to and about yourself, and just to know that your behaviors and your patterns are rubbing off on them. So the, yeah, whole good food, bad food, food guilt, cheat day, clean eating stuff, like, you just have to try to eat as well as you can. You just have to try to do the best by your body and just have so much self-compassion for yourself and know that you're doing the best you can, you know?
No, I totally agree with you. I do think too that you and I are like, we're like twinsies. we totally think the same way. So it's, yeah, fantastic.
It's so important though, you know, because in a society that's so dominated by diet industry and diet fad, I think it's really important to have empowered women who have gone through kind of the ropes and come out on the other side of the flames type thing, you know, mm-hmm, who can share messages like this, like, it's okay, you know, if you want to go to a birthday party on Saturday night and drink a bottle of wine and eat two pieces of cake, it's okay, you, yeah, know, but just know that the next day then you're probably going to want to drink some extra water and maybe have a green salad and a nut bar or something at lunchtime so that you recalibrate your body the next day and kind of come off that sugar high. You know, it's just, yeah, knowing and respecting yourself enough to choose foods that fuel you and choose foods that make you feel good instead of trying to find your worthiness and find your validation in the bottom of a bag of all-dressed chips.
And to add to that, just for anyone who is going to that party and drinking the bottle of wine and having the cake, choose that if that makes you happy in the moment. But also in that moment, don't sit there thinking about how much you're going to have to work out the next day in order to work it off. Please try to avoid that mentality, because it's not a direct, like what you put in is not like a direct correlation of what, like the input output is never equal. Like it's, you know what I mean? Like it kind of fluctuates like throughout your body. So like, even if you the next day go to the gym and you burn 3,500 calories in the day, cause you just work out like a fiend, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to step on the scale and you're going to be a pound lighter. So don't worry about those numbers and don't worry about like trying to figure out how you're going to work it off. Just know that it's all going to balance out eventually. So just go with the flow and like, just try to be conscientious of what you're putting into your body and be okay with the days that you decide not to be. And that's totally fine. And don't worry about the output all the time, please. Cause I think that happens more times than not. People are like eating it and the whole time they're eating it, they're having no joy because they're thinking this is like 2-hour run tomorrow. That's the worst.
Well, and like, I'm so glad that you brought that up too, because that I can't actually believe that we didn't talk about these two last points here is when you are eating and working out because you're punishing yourself, you know, like if you're restricting calories and you're working your ass up at the gym and doing these things out of a punishment mentality rather than a self-celebration mentality, your body feels that. Like that goes back to that whole stress thing. Your cortisol levels are going to be raised. Your body's going to hold on to excess fat around your midsection. Like that's just, that's science. It's going to hold on and retain because it's scared and it's stressed. So instead of that, just developing that self-compassion piece, that self-love piece, it is so key. And I think there's some people who are all for self-love, which I am, and there's some people who are kind of sick of hearing it. But I mean, man, those are probably the people who need it the most, you know, just developing that. And along the same lines too, please ditch the scale. Like it is...
Oh, amen.
I actually like had a scale funeral and I smashed that thing in my alley one year because I was so sick of it. And I don't even know how much I weigh. I could not tell you, but I measure my progress by how my clothes fit and how my energy levels are. And if I'm sleeping well, if I'm relaxed and calm and loving and my, you know, like in pictures, I use pictures for progress. Yeah. The scale number, because it tells you nothing. It tells you literally your gravitational pull. That's it.
Totally. Everyone that's listening right now, anyone who has a scale funeral, can you take a photo and send it to us? Because I agree with you 1000%. I know I've said this in a previous podcast for anyone listening that's heard all of ours, but even like, I have no idea how much I weigh. And even throughout my pregnancy, I still have no idea how much I weigh. I would stand backwards on the scale at the doctor's office and have them record it. And I would just tell them, I'm like, if I get out of range, if I'm getting out of control, just tell me. I'm like, but as long as I'm in the healthy range, that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, it means nothing to me. The number reflects nothing about my progress or where I'm at or how strong I am or how healthy I am. So just, if you're listening, just ditch it. And if you do it and you smash it to pieces, take a photo and send it to us so that we can celebrate with you, because that's one less person being like a slave to the scale, which I think is just, it's so hard because you're never going to win against it.
No. And it can dictate your whole day's mood, you know?
Oh man. Yeah.
Like that's such a sick power to give away. I just think it's really disempowering to allow that little number to tell you how you should feel about yourself for the rest of the day and how you should go about your day. You know, like you are a beautiful, magnificent unicorn of the universe. Like you should go and celebrate yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, I wanted to mention before I forgot, I have a couple books that, that I could recommend that are super good too, as a nice starting point for people if they are struggling with this. The one book that I often will recommend to clients and have read it myself, and well, I've read all these myself, I'm a book junkie, but it's called The Goddess Revolution by Mel Wells.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fabulous. And then another one that I really enjoy is called Mastering Your Mean Girl by Melissa Ambrosini.
Yeah.
And then the third one I have is called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers by Debbie Ford. And those are all like really powerful reads with, they all have self-reflective journaling activities in them. So good place to start.
perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you, honestly, Marie, thank you so much for sharing with us today. We do have to wrap it up, unfortunately, because I feel like we could just talk forever. But but why don't you tell our listeners before we head off, why don't you tell them how they can find out more info about you or reach out to you if they have questions, if they want to work with you or anything? How can they get in touch?
Absolutely. So my website is mariebarkerwellness.com, and same thing on Instagram at mariebarkerwellness. And I mean, I'm available. I'm pretty open, like I through email, through Instagram message, whatever. I like to make myself readily available. So if you guys are interested in working together, I do work with 10 new women every single month, and I have a new private accountability group coming up on April 9th that I'm super stoked about. I'm calling it April Rains, Bring May Gains. So,
fantastic.
That's where to find me.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much. And for everyone listening, thank you so much for listening. And of course, if you are interested in learning more about us and FitChicks and what we do at FitChicks Academy, check us out at fitchicksacademy.com. We have our upcoming fitness and nutrition expert certification, as well as our holistic nutrition weight loss expert program. You can check them out under the programs tab there. And then of course, any questions, comments, anything at all that you want to share, you can email us info@fitchicks.ca, or feel free to leave comments below or post the pictures below of you smashing your scale below this podcast, because we would love to see it and we'd love to hear from you. So thank you again, everyone. Thank you, Marie. And we will talk to you again next week, chicks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Fit Chicks Chat Podcast. Want more healthy love? Visit www.fitchicks.com for amazing resources, free workouts, recipes, tips, and so much more to help you live your healthiest and fiercest life, inside and out.